Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Under the Radar SFF Books Podcast. I'm your host, Blaze, as always. Thank you so much for listening and joining me wherever you may be around the world. And today is a very special podcast episode. I'm joined by podcast host and debut author, Adrian Gibson. He is the host of SFF Addicts Podcast. If you're not listening to that, you really should. It's amazing. And the debut author for Mushroom Blues, book one in the Hoffman Report, and the first book in the Fungal Universe. Adrian, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Blaze. No, I really appreciate it. And I mean, we're both fellow podcasters, but I've actually been a fan of your podcast since you started it, since we've known each other in the virtual sphere for quite some time. But yeah, it's cool to finally be on your show. And it's kind of weird to transition from being the podcast host to now being the interviewee.
Yeah, thank you so much for the praise. That means so much to me. Yeah, you've interviewed so many authors and had so many discussions on your podcast. How does it feel to like do the shift from an author discussing your baby, your work?
It's kind of, on one hand, it's very exciting. And on the other, it's quite nerve-wracking. Because I was talking to my co-host, MJ Kuhn, who I believe has been on this podcast before, so folks have potentially heard your interview with her. She was saying that coming from the author side and then now joining SFF Addicts, that she was quite nervous about hosting and being the one to ask questions, whereas for me, it's been quite the reverse, where I'm so comfortable and I'm so in my zone as a host and an interviewer. And now flipping it around, I realize like, holy shit, there are so many things that have just been inside my head for ages, and I've never spoken them out loud to anybody other than like my wife or my close friends. So it's quite surreal in that sense, but it's also really fun to kind of break down that barrier.
The shoe is definitely on the other foot, so to speak. And we're very happy to share this. So let's start from the beginning. Where did the inspiration come from for Mushroom Blues and the Fungal Universe in general? And just walk us through how this idea came into your head.
So I've been a fan of mushrooms for a very long time. It started in childhood. I grew up on the west coast of British Columbia and just exploring the forest and going into my parents' backyard, I would find mushrooms all over the place. It's a temperate rainforest, so it's very lush. And there's a lot of vegetation, but not necessarily what people think of when they think of rainforest, but a lot of old growth trees, a lot of ferns and shrubs and stuff like that, but also just a ton of debris that has fallen to the forest floor. And that is like mushroom heaven. You know what I mean? So for me, just exploring the forest as a kid and going and playing and doing like, you know, pretending that we're knights with like stick swords and like straight up fighting each other in the forest, but also looking down at the ground and seeing what's happening there and just having a fascination that has evolved throughout my entire life. And as I got older, my relationship with fungi kind of shifted into the more psychedelic realm. And in my late teens, when I was in university, I started experimenting with mushrooms and acid and things like that. And that kind of opened my eyes up to what plants and what nature are capable of when paired with the power of human consciousness. And there was one day, like one night, I guess 6 years ago, where I had a dream and I was just walking through a forest and I saw a massive towering bioluminescent mushroom, just like all these old growth evergreen trees and this giant mushroom just towering over all of them. And that was kind of the spark for what would become the Fungal Verse, except early on it started out as a sort of travelogue type thing where the POV character was in the POV was sort of like in the shoes of a nameless avatar that the reader could put themselves into and explore this mushroom kingdom. It was called The Outsider's Guide to the Mushroom Kingdom, which has consequently turned into like a meta text within the universe. And what that was kind of like imagining how mushrooms could be a framework for us to reimagine the betterment of society, whether it was on a sort of individual level or a community level, from architecture to engineering, all these different facets of human life. But how could mushrooms be used as a way to explore the follies of what we've kind of grown into as a species, and thinking about new ways in which they could be used, or at least sparking ideas within people to, you know, find ways of bettering humanity, but without necessarily using mushrooms. So it's kind of like this dual thread there. But I realized after all this research and all this time that I spent, it was quite preachy. And I mean, as you know, readers don't really like preachy. It doesn't really come across that well.
Depends on what you like to read.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, there's a difference between, say, Ayn Rand and the pretty overt messages in, say, The Fountainhead, for example, versus Dune and the way that Frank Herbert approached these big themes, but in a much more subtle way. And so I realized this wasn't necessarily the way it was going to work for The Outsider's Guide to the Mushroom Kingdom. That wasn't going to be the path that satisfied me, nor was it going to be a path that I would be able to give to readers and think this is going to be received well. But at the foundation of that was mushrooms and the idea of mushroom people and how mushrooms symbiotically merged with a branch of humanity that became isolated. So it's kind of thinking of like what happened with humans when Homo sapiens diverged and Neanderthals branched off on their path. And the fact that these two species of humans were quite similar in a lot of ways. They had common ancestors, but there were distinct aspects to their biology and aspects to their culture and language and things like that. And they could still interbreed and all that as well. And so I kind of took that foundation and then just said, like, what genres do I love? I love cyberpunk. I love murder mysteries. I love police procedurals. And then I realized I could take story frameworks from genres that I adore and put them into the Fungalverse as exciting stories with an undercurrent of sociopolitical commentary.
Oh, that was a lot to digest, but thank you so much for sharing. I really appreciate it. And as you were saying, your first thought for this series was kind of like a wanderer, like a hermit, divulging mm-hmm. the story. But you shifted it into the Hoffman Report, which is a detective. I think of it as like a combination of like True Detective and Jeff Vandermeer. And if you like Law and Order, like the detective side of it, I just ate it up. And I was fortunate enough to read not the whole book, but the first eight chapters, and it gives you a really good hook for this series. So let's talk about, well, could you give like your like 2-minute pitch of what the first book, Mushroom Blues, is about? Because you can tell it better than I could, and then we can get into the fun stuff.
Yeah, and I'm glad you used True Detective and Vandermeer, because those are kind of like the pillars of inspiration for this particular story. I'm a huge fan of Jeff Vandermeer's work. I love True Detective, especially the first season, which is just oozing with atmosphere. It's so good. But for the Hoffman Report, so Mushroom Blues follows NKPD detective, a homicide detective, Henrietta Hoffman, and a mushroom-headed B-cop named Koji Nimeko, as they investigate the mysterious murder of a child who washes up in a bag on a beach. And so their investigation takes them all across the city of Neokonoko, where they're investigating not just this murder, but also the mysterious disappearances of fungal and half-breed children, and how all of that kind of coalesces around the sociopolitical atmosphere of the city. It takes place 2 years after a war has just ended. The city is occupied by humans. The native fungal population is subjugated and cordoned off into certain areas. They're discriminated against. And so there's a lot of room for exploration of human nature. And at the same time, you have lots of action. It's kind of got a thriller type pacing, lots of body horror as well. You have fungal gangsters, you have corrupt military, you have police officers, and all of these different things kind of commingling in a very messy and kind of like explosive situation in the city of Neokonoko.
Well, it's definitely explosive. I will say that. That's not a spoiler. That's just giving you guys a little bit of a hook. So that's awesome. Why don't we dive into the two main characters, because those are pretty much the ones I've been introduced to. But first, we've talked about this before. My favorite type of story to read is first person POV, like detective, getting inside the character's head. And you do that with Henrietta, who's the lead detective. First off, what made you want to do first-person POV as opposed to, like, third-person? Is it something you always knew you wanted to write, or was this just spur-of-the-moment type of thing?
For this book in particular, I knew it had to be first-person because it is such an intimate look into the life of this detective. And just with the things that are going on, we're inside her head so much that I knew there had to be that intimacy there with first person in order to understand the emotional turmoil that Henrietta is going through, the ways in which she is confronting her cultural programming in terms of her disdain of fungal people and her racism towards them. But at the same time, dealing with the traumas of her past and how all of those things come together over the course of this story. Third person, I could have done third person sort of like closed POV, but at the same time, I knew first person would have that intimacy that would really sell her as a character going through an immense amount of change, because ultimately this book is, even though it's a murder mystery, even though it's a police procedural, ultimately, it is a book about awakening and acceptance, and it is very much about Henrietta's personal evolution as she gets towards those moments of awakening and acceptance.
Great, and you did a fantastic job of the parts of the book that I've read so far. So you said for this book, it's first person. You're saying that subsequent books in the series are going to be third person? You're going to switch it up a little bit?
I'm thinking, so there are other series in the Fungalverse where the perspectives will be third person. The next book that I put out, which will be the beginning of a different series, that will have three POV characters, all third person, all revolving around the concept of threes, essentially. So I went kind of meta in that sense. But for the Hoffman Report, it will always be first person from Henrietta's point of view, but later installments, there's going to be four books in the series. Later installments, I'm thinking of including Koji as like a third person POV in there as well.
Awesome. More of Koji. We love to hear that.
Oh, dude, Koji's my boy. Yeah.
let's finish off on Henrietta and then we'll get into Koji. So I appreciate, the way you approached Henrietta. She's not just like a teenager or someone in the early 20s, like just entering the police force. She's older. She's been through, she has definitely a past. She's had abuse. She's dealt with abuse. She's dealt with drugs like alcohol, and she has a very, very dark past, which you immediately see in the first couple chapters as you're describing her past. Did you always want it to her to have like this trauma and just involving the story, or is that something that just came to you as you were writing the story?
A lot of it was pretty spontaneous. I knew that I wanted her to be an ex-alcoholic. That was like the main thing. But the way that evolved was just like a beautiful example of how mad creativity can be, you know? Like I was talking to my friend Jonathan Nevere recently about like plotting and pantsing or outlining and all that kind of stuff, sort of the difference between having a framework for your story versus just kind of going into it and letting the creativity flow. But for both of us, it's kind of like, it's good to have a sort of loose framework to build off of, but then to just discover what happens based on those foundations that you've laid out. And for Henrietta, so much of it was just completely spontaneous based on the way that the story was carrying her along, and then going back and doing edits and realizing this is a really important pillar in her character and her progression over the course of this book. And she gets into some pretty dark shit, not just dark in terms of what she's experienced in the past and how that comes back to haunt her, but also the explicit stuff that she is experiencing in the moment of the story and how that essentially forces her to confront these things that she has pushed aside and suppressed for so long, and these traumas that have basically ruined her life. And in Neo Kanoko, of all places, through investigating the death of a fungal child, by investigating it with a fungal in Koji, she is able to open her eyes and open her mind to the realities of what she was doing to herself and how that was affecting the people around her and just destroying everything that she touched.
Awesome. And now we have the other character, who is Koji. He is a fungal person, or you like to say mushroom head. He's the only one on the force. And you definitely tell with the atmosphere of the story that you're trying to tell that the humans and the mushroom people, they absolutely hate each other because of the spore war, which you have you allude to, that happened 2 years earlier in the book. And Koji, he joins the force not because he likes the people he's working with, it's because he wants to make a change from within. And he seems to be, with Henrietta, he's the only person who can really talk to the mushroom people because they have their own language. And I love how you introduced a little bit of like Asian, like Japanese flair to him. That was a lot of fun. So talk to us about Koji, because I'm sure he'll be a fan favorite.
Koji is... Yeah, I mean, we're recording this with video, but people will only hear the audio. But I have an illustration that I drew of Koji, and he was actually one of the first characters that I created in this world, because a lot of the fungal verse started out as illustration concepts, because I have a background in illustration. I used to be a tattoo artist, and so I kind of brought that into approach it from this like dual angle of writing and creating this world and research, but at the same time using illustration as a way to visualize what this world could look like, what the people could look like. And so Koji was really early on, which is why I love him so much, because he's so near and dear to my heart. And the first book that I wrote in the fungal verse, which is the one that's going to come out next after Mushroom Blues, I scrapped the first version that I wrote of it, but the building blocks that are there are really strong, so I'm reworking it in order to use that as the first book for another trilogy. And Koji is one of the main POVs in that, but he also has a very interesting past in the fact that he fought in the Spore War against the humans when they invaded, and over the course of this series and subsequent books, it'll become more apparent why humans have invaded Hapon and why they have subjugated the mushroom people and why all these events have happened. But Koji's kind of like the window through which Henrietta can better understand this city and these people and their culture. And their language, because even though she has practiced their language and can understand it when she hears it, she still struggles to speak it herself. But then also her cultural programming has imbued in her this desire to not speak it, because that would mean lowering yourself in order to cater to these people that the Caprinians view as lesser than. And so it's this important lens for Henrietta to have Koji by her side, whether she wants to be around him or not, because she's even mycophobic and doesn't like mushrooms. Like, she is grossed out by them. And then to have a fungal person by her side the whole time, she's like, oh, fuck this. Like, I don't want this guy near me. But he is kind of like the linchpin for the investigation, because without him, Henrietta is not able to enter into spaces and understand things that would further the investigation were it not for the fact that Koji is with her. And their relationship and the way that builds over the course of this book, but also the way it's going to build over the course of the three sequels in the Hoffman Report, is for me kind of like the beating heart of this series, is like this burgeoning buddy cop relationship.
Yeah. And so much more, more Koji is equals more fun. That's just the way it is. Now there's yeah. two types of, well, not, there's more types. It depends on what type of reader you are. I'm the person who, I love characters, and your characters shine through and they're very interesting to read, but you get more from like your world building. Even in the few chapters that I was able to read, you introduce so much from like the dark past with the war between these two cultures, to the mushroom people themselves. Obviously they have mushrooms on their head. They emit from themselves like spores and all other types of mold, which Henrietta actually has to wear a mask when she's around them. Otherwise they'll get sick. As soon as I read that, I'm like, she's wearing a mask. I'm like, was this influenced at all by COVID when we're all walking around wearing masks?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We don't have to relive those dark times, but you get the feel from that and you can empathize with that, cause we actually lived it to an extent. And all around you, the world building, like with these, the buildings and infrastructure, you're seeing giant fungi that are like different colors. One, like you see on your main cover, one's like dark and blue. You get so much from this series just in the first few chapters. Like, I just can't wait to read what else is in store. I'm curious, what type of reader are you? Do you read more for characters? Do you read more for world building? A little bit of both? What's your cup of tea?
Characters are core for me, but world is what gives the character their flavor, in the sense that if a character is really interesting but they exist within a pretty bland world, then it's likely that that world will not give them enough sort of experiences to really allow them to flesh themselves out in the best way possible. And so it's like, if you have an interesting world that gives the characters this chance to do things that reveal more about them to you, while also kind of like trickling more of the world in at the same time, then it's the best of both worlds, because the characters shine, but then they are complemented by this world. And the two are inextricably linked at that point, where the characters' actions are a reflection of what is happening around them and the people that are around them. And the world is also a reflection of the people that inhabit it. And so, and back to my friend Jonathan Nevers, he actually, in some feedback for this book, he phrased it as microdose world building, which is perfectly applicable to the mushroom world. But it's like, you're not dumping information on people, but you are allowing it to permeate through the story in a very natural way, where you get a sense of the history, you get a sense of the place, you get a sense of the culture and relationships between different groups and how all those dynamics play out. And for me, what's most interesting is when the stakes of the character's arc and their story doesn't necessarily like shake the entirety of that world, you know, because fantasy, I feel, is a lot more in the realm of the world is going to end and shit's just gonna like die and explode, or some dark lord is here to wipe us all off the face of the earth. But in sci-fi and getting even deeper into genres like cyberpunk and murder mysteries and police procedurals, a lot of it is much more intimate. And even though the stakes might seem big in the context of a character and a community, that's just the result of good storytelling. It doesn't have to be like, you know, the entirety of Hopon, like all the fungal people are going to die if this happens. It's much more local in terms of this is happening in Neokonoko and this is what is affecting this city and the people that inhabit it. And so I really approach the world building in that sense, where I'm not like, I'm not going to go into all the other cities that are across the archipelago, like the island nation that the fungals inhabit. I'm not going to go deep into like everything that's happening back in Capernia, which is Henrietta's homeland. I'm going to give you a very clear sense of what is happening here in Neokonoko as a result of what the different characters are doing.
Yep. And you did a fantastic job. It's very like micro, the way you introduce it, and then you slowly expand. Even with Henrietta, it's a little flat. She'll be talking, or she's on the case, and all of a sudden she'll have like a memory or a flashback to what happened in her marriage, or like the remembering like parts of the Spore War. And you're introducing it in little bits and pieces that never detracts, just drives the story forward. And I appreciate that so much. I'm not the biggest fan of info dumping, although there is a time and a place.
Yeah, me neither.
There is a time and a place for it. It depends on the type of story you, you're reading, but yeah. You know, not my cup of tea, and I'm glad it's not yours either.
Yeah. And I mean, that's just a matter of personal taste. And there are going to be some readers who really love info dumping, but I think the question around exposition is also really flexible, because there are some authors who do exposition extremely well, like Fonda Lee in her Greenbone Saga series does an amazing job of giving you info dumps that feel really natural within the context of the world and the character's lived experience. Whereas, you know, not to dump on fantasy again, but there's often like, here's a prologue and we're just going to give you a bunch of names and a bunch of dates and a bunch of events that happen, and the there's no context for it, and it kind of pulls you out more than it draws you into the story at that point.
Seems like you're getting a little bit of pushback from the prototypical fantasy story. How would you categorize the Hoffman Report, besides like a detective noir, like weird fiction? How would you categorize it?
Yeah, I mean, weird fiction is definitely the best, like, broader sort of classification for it. I came up with the term fungal punk just because I love, like, joking about the whole, like, punk sort of subgenre thing. So it's a bit of a joke thing, but I also think fungal punk sounds really cool. Even though I would say, like, Jeff Vandermeer is one of the forefathers of fungal punk. But it's more like weird fiction, blending genres with, you know, cyberpunk flavor, not necessarily cyberpunk technology, but definitely murder mystery, noir, and police procedural in terms of the beats that you can expect and the sort of things that happen, with a bit of a faster pace and shorter chapters and that kind of thing. Like, I don't think I have any chapter that goes over like 14 pages kind of thing. Most of it is like between 7 to 12. So it kind of moves along at a much faster pace.
Those are the types of books I love, that I can binge those very, very quickly. Just quick chapters. And don't feel bad about inventing fungal punk. One of my favorite series, you probably read it, by Ken Liu, The Dandelion Dynasty, or you've heard of it?
Yes, so good.
So good.
So good.
One of my favorite series of all time. I think he coined the term silk punk.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you came to it first, all the props to you.
but in Ken's case, I think because I spoke to him on SFF Addicts pretty recently, he went into the Silk Punk moniker with a lot of technicality and a lot of forethought in terms of what makes this Silk Punk, but also what Silk Punk entails from the reader's standpoint and what they're seeing on the page. And so I think he put a lot more work into the idea of Silk Punk than I put into Fungal Punk. I was kind of just like, I'm writing a lot about mushrooms and I think mushrooms are amazing. And that is kind of like the foundation of this world. And just kind of having a laugh and saying like, let's just throw punk at the end and see what lands. And Fungal Punk, you know, hopefully will catch on. But at the end of the day, it's like, if Fungal Punk is just me, I'll take it.
Hey, it has a nice ring to it. So, I mean, yeah. I'll be saying it. And I got to listen to that episode with Ken. He's one of my favorite authors. Definitely got to give that one a listen. So you mentioned earlier that the Fungalverse is many, many books in several different series. I was hoping you could give us a little bit of taste of what readers are potentially in for in this Fungalverse universe that you created.
Just get ready for a lot of damn mushrooms, man.
Oh, no. I'm kidding. I love it.
Mushroom Blues is the first book in the Hoffman Report series. So that'll be, as I mentioned earlier, four books. And that'll be just kind of like Henrietta and Koji's story as this sort of buddy cop duo. And that one, in terms of the timeline, takes place very soon after the Spore War. 30 years down the line, we have Spore City, which is the first book that I wrote but scrapped, and now I'm kind of reworking. That will be the beginning of the Konoko trilogy, and hoping to have that one out later this year. And that one is kind of bringing in much more cyberpunk elements with corporate espionage and sort of like gangster families, very much like Greenbone Saga type thing. But at the same time, really keeping that core of mystery and how that plays into Koji's storyline in that particular book. So that one is going to be a trilogy. I'm going to write a standalone Spore War novel down the line at some point. I've also got this idea of a duology that takes place in the same world, but hundreds of years in the past, which is centered around a more samurai Edo period Japan style era in the world of Hapan. So there's going to be like fungal samurai with like their big mushroom caps and their swords and everything like that. I'm going to be very much inspired by Akira Kurosawa films and like Rob J. Hayes' Never Die and the
great book
Mortal Technique series. That is kind of like what I'm aiming for, but with a shit ton of mushrooms. And so, yeah, it's going to be a pretty expansive universe. I have a couple of short story collections in mind as well, but in total, there's going to be a lot of back and forth between different series. And at the same time, I'm going to start introducing non-fungal verse stories into my repertoire. So different series, some that take place on Earth, some that take place in different secondary universes, but kind of at the beginning, going back and forth with some of these Fungalverse series.
You're going to be a busy beaver writing all these stories. How do you find the time for it?
just happens. I mean, like I'm a stay-at-home dad, which does not equate to much free time for any stay-at-home parents out there. MJ and I talk about all the time, it's not necessarily about having time, it's about making time and being passionate about this. The same way that I'm passionate about podcasting, I make the time for podcasting and absolutely adore it. And writing fits into that similar kind of space where even if I don't necessarily have the time, I'll just be like jotting down notes on a notepad or writing on my phone and then kind of like recollecting all of my thoughts and all of my notes whenever I have time to kind of sit down and, you know, pump out words for an hour, 2 hours.
Renaissance man. I love it. And I can't wait for your prequel duology you said with any by kind of like Rob Hayes' Never Die. I absolutely love that book. It shook me when I read it for the first time. I just can't get enough of it. One final question. So you're a new author, getting your book out to the world. What news or things you know now which you wish you knew when you started out? Could you give like any new authors or someone new trying to become an author themselves any words of inspiration?
Yeah, this is the really difficult one because I feel very privileged in the sense that I started a podcast before I became an author. I started the podcast while I was aspiring to be a published author, but I had given myself enough time to build up a community and to meet other people and to meet other authors and learn as much as I could and absorb just like the bounty of information. And I know you know this because it's like all the authors you talk to, there's just a bounty of information and a bounty of passion that they are very happy and willing to put out into the world. And so for me, like community has been absolutely key in terms of, doesn't mean like start a podcast. You don't have to start a podcast if you don't want to, but don't launch your book without having any presence on social media, especially if you're in self-publishing. You need to be able to put yourself out there at least a little bit and kind of find your personal boundaries in terms of what's comfortable or uncomfortable for you in relation to what you speak about online, what you show online, and at the same time, how willing you are to connect with other people. And for me, podcasting, but also just kind of existing within like the SFF blog space and FanFi Addict and the different reviewers that are there and all the kind of nodes that intersect, that has given me the opportunity to meet a ton of incredible people, but also become friends with a lot of them, like close friends. MJ and I are really good friends, even though we barely knew each other before we started podcasting together. Crystal Matar is another amazing friend of mine. And I had the chance to meet both of them in person when I was in Canada last summer, which was just surreal. Like, this is what you're like in real life. And it's more like the physical disconnect of, this is like how tall you actually are and all these kinds of things. Like, I can actually like hug you and kind of like just like feel your presence, but the personality is just the same. Because what I've found is that, especially in the indie space, authors are for the most part very genuine. And so reach out to them. You know, if you don't have any presence at all, get onto social media and ask authors, even if it's just a tweet, you know, saying like, how did you approach this thing? What difficulties did you have in your career, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of authors are willing to talk about that stuff. And to the point where it's like, if you DM them, many will respond to you. You know, like, I don't even know how many interviews I've gotten because I just DM'd the author. And they were like, yeah, like, here's my email and we'll set something up. So don't be afraid to reach out to authors and kind of step outside of your comfort zone a little bit and seek the advice that you feel like you need in order to surpass whatever hurdle you have at that particular moment, whether it's on a craft level and you're struggling with that, whether it's marketing. Like Ryan Cahill just absolutely saved me when it came to marketing, because I just messaged him. I was like, dude, I need you to like walk me through all this different stuff. I had a list on a Word document, and he's just like, yeah, man, tell me a day and a time and we'll do a call. We talked for like 2 hours and he just went through everything. And that was really beneficial for me, because the other most difficult part of being a self-published author, especially, and before you get published, is just finding the right information. If you have difficulty finding the right information, seeking out those authors might be a good first step in order to kind of break down your barrier of fear. Because now that I've gone through so much of it and I'm approaching book launch, all these things that I was scared of before, I'm like, oh yeah, that's no problem. You know, like different fears come into play, but there are certain things that you can alleviate for yourself if you research, if you ask the right people, and if you are confident enough to step outside of your comfort zone and just message someone or email them, like go to their website and find their email address or their contact form or something like that. Just take that step. And it might be difficult in the moment, but it'll save your ass in the long term.
That's great advice. Thank you for sharing. I couldn't agree more. Being able to be humbled, step outside your comfort zone, and just reach out, even though it's going to be uncomfortable. I don't know if anyone can tell, but you guys listening to me, I am a very shy, introverted person by nature. I'm actually, you can't tell, but I'm actually, my knees are shaking right now. But, you know, that's practice, and you know, learn to overcome it. Mm-hmm. You find your community, you find the people who will support you and believe in what you're doing. That's why I wanted to do this podcast, is to introduce people to stories and authors that they might not find in the meantime. So I support you. I support your journey. I support your book. I loved everything I read so far.
Thank
and
you.
Can't wait to read the rest of it. So cheers to you.
Thank you,
Matt. So why don't we wrap up? Why don't you tell the listeners where they can find you, your podcast handle, obviously, and the Hoffman Report, when they can get it and where they can buy it.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, first of all, thank you so much. Like, really appreciate you. I just love the podcasting space and everyone who is so willing to just kind of like open their doors and support debut authors. Obviously, like, I know a lot of the different podcasters, so I have the benefit of that. But another quick piece of advice: don't be afraid to reach out to BookTubers, podcasters, even if you're a debut author. It's like, present yourself professionally and come into it knowing, not expecting that they will hand you everything on a silver platter, but at the same time, knowing that all the podcasters that I know out there are super kind people. And even if they can't get you on the podcast now or at any point, most of them will reply with a kind message, and just keep persisting and know that the work that you put in will reflect in the way that other people view you. So be professional about it. Be kind. Don't be a dick when they say, like, I'm sorry, like, you know, even if your book sounds awesome, I can't have you on my podcast. Just say thank you for your time. And come back later, you know, come back later in your career, and they might have the opportunity to bring you on their show. And for me, you can find me across all social medias for the most part, at Adrian M. Gibson. You can find SFF Addicts at SFF Addicts Pod. You can listen to that on all the podcast platforms, specifically Spotify and YouTube has video available if you prefer that as well. You can also check out whatever's going on in my Mushroom Blues book tour, my virtual book tour, which is going on right now. I think by the time this episode goes live, you can check out the chapter 1 and chapter 2 excerpts on Before We Go blog and FanFi Addict. You can check out a world building essay that I wrote called Welcome to the Fungalverse. That's on FanFi Addict. On Before We Go blog, I'll have a list of fungi into fiction. So Jeff Vandermeer and other authors who've incorporated fungi into their SFF, and also an essay on Silverstone's bookstore blog about writing an indie and sort of the punk ethos that goes into it. So you can check all that out and all the different interviews and stuff that I've got going on right now. But yeah, I really appreciate you having me on, Blaze.
Awesome. It's been a pleasure having you on. And just to confirm, what's the release date of Mushroom Blues?
Yeah, so that's out on March 19th. That'll be available. I'm not doing pre-orders because I'm just fun like that. So that'll be out on March 19th in paperback, hardcover, ebook, and audiobook. And I'll be recording the audiobook myself with the help of a friend of mine here in Quito, who's a sound engineer. So we're going to, you know, make it sound as good as possible. But at the same time, I'm going to incorporate music from the Mushroom Blues soundtrack, which is releasing the same day as Mushroom Blues. That'll be available on March 19th. That is an 8-track, 45-minute album produced and mastered by Spore, two friends of mine over in Sweden. Amazingly talented guys. Blaze, I think, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it yet.
It's good. It's really good, guys.
It's a good mood setter for the book and accompanies it very well.
Yeah.
So that'll be available digitally. Not sure about the platforms just yet, but probably like Bandcamp and whatnot. You can stream it on Spotify, and I'll also have a Spotify playlist to coincide with the book and with those tracks kind of incorporated throughout. And then they're also releasing 50 limited edition cassette tapes. So I don't know exactly which platform they're going to be releasing that on, but just check out my social media or head over to adrianmgibson.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on, Adrian. I really, really appreciate it. And you guys, get yourself a copy of Mushroom Blues. You'll really like it. Adrian, let's do this again sometime, hopefully with your next book in the series, and having you on and talking about books.
No, I really appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
All right. Cheers, everybody.